Welcome to Clifton Health on Air.
I'm your host, Danielle.
And I'm your co-host, Lauren.
And we are a local health department podcast here in Clifton, New Jersey that also services the township of Little Falls.
We are located 12 miles west of New York City.
Today's podcast is all about National Diabetes Month. Today we have three wonderful guests that we will discuss a wonderful conversation with. Juliana Gallo, registered dietitian at ShopRite of Lodi. Gallo leads the store with new offerings of free nutrition counseling and wellness programs for customers and local community organizations. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I also have Christy Caparoso, senior licensed clinical social worker at Joseph M. Sanzari Children's Hospital at Hackensack University Medical Center, and certified diabetes care and education specialist. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And via Zoom, we have Marissa Winters, registered dietitian nutritionist at Integrative Health and Medicine at Hackensack Meridian Health. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much, ladies, for coming. And we'll get right into the podcast. And just tell us a little bit about your work and what population you work with.
So yeah, at my role with ShopRite, the beauty of the job there is that I really get to work with all populations. So everything from, you know, before birth, so pregnancy all the way through seniors. So like I said, just the beauty that I'm not, you know, honed in on one population. I really get to work with anybody that is looking for help.
Wonderful.
I am in pediatrics at Hackensack, so I primarily work with patients and families ages anywhere from 0 to 21. Primarily, I work with our families with type 1 diabetes, but I do some work with our families with type 2 diabetes as well.
And I am part of the integrative team, which is an outpatient specialty clinic. We have two locations, one at Riverview and one in Hope Tower next to Jersey Shore in Neptune, New Jersey. We see a number of different types of patients. Certainly diabetes is well represented. For nutrition, there are two of us who are the integrative nutritionists, and we take a very broad team approach. We have a lot of offerings, so we try to treat the whole person. And so we get a lot of gut health, but we also get, of course, a lot of diabetes and a lot of weight loss and wanting to improve diet as well as lifestyle. We focus a lot on lifestyle medicine.
Awesome. We're going to dive a little bit deeper, but before we get into that, I guess we do have to ask the basic question. What is diabetes?
There's two primary types of diabetes. The more common ones are type 1 and type 2. Type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease where the body attacks the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas so that over time, the person's body no longer produces insulin and they become insulin-dependent either by taking insulin shots or wearing an insulin pump. And then type 2 diabetes is a bit more of like a genetic, whether it's like genetics, lifestyle contributes to it. It's more that the body makes insulin, but it's very insulin resistant. So interventions could be oral medications, sometimes insulin, a lot of lifestyle interventions as well.
Yeah, I think you covered it beautifully. There are sometimes instances of gestational diabetes that may pop up. But yeah, I think you covered it better than I could have said it, so nothing else to add.
All right. I guess what types of diabetes do you mainly work with?
So with ShopRite, I would say predominantly type 2 diabetes as well as pre-diabetes. Okay. So kind of in that range where the numbers are not yet in the diabetes range, but they are approaching. So trying to prevent getting to full-on diabetes. Occasionally I will work with a type 1 client, but again, predominantly type 2 or pre-diabetes.
Okay. Yeah, that's our experience as well. And because there is just more type 2 diabetes in the population than type 1 diabetes, so you're just going to get those numbers more likely. And I agree with Julianne, that we get a lot of pre-diabetics where the numbers are starting to go up and it's starting to get problematic. And that's a beautiful sweet spot to really start interventions.
For those that are listening and don't know what the range of pre-diabetes is there a specific number or is there some risks to that?
So typically, your doctor would run your hemoglobin A1C numbers. And if you're in that 5.7 to 6.4 range, that would be that pre-diabetes range.
And you talked about type 1, right? That's your primary population?
Primarily, yeah. I work with our patients and their families who are living with type 1. We do have a fair amount of type 2 patients as well.
Oh, okay.
Even in pediatrics, the prevalence has gone up in recent years, but I would say primarily I work with type 1.
Looking at the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Disease, they have this wonderful toolkit for National Diabetes Month. I'm just going to read what they describe is diabetes. Diabetes is a disease that occurs when your blood glucose, also called blood sugar, is too high. When it's not managed, diabetes can damage the eyes, kidneys, nerves, and heart, and is linked to some types of cancer. If you have diabetes, taking care of your health as soon as possible may help you prevent other health problems. So the question is, how can a person check for their risks of developing diabetes?
So from my end, some of the biggest risk factors are being at a higher weight. Okay. So just keeping an eye on, you know, your overall weight and wellness. And kind of linked with that is living a sedentary lifestyle. So what that means is not really having that movement. You're kind of sitting or just being still for a large part of the day. And those are two big things that, you know, we can modify. So, and we do have control over. So sometimes in these situations, we might feel a little bit helpless, but there are things that we can do. So, you know, looking at those risk factors and, you know, what are the ones that we can change or we can modify? So, like I said, moving our body and just keeping an eye on our weight.
Okay.
And I think following with your primary care, having a primary care provider who can keep an eye on, because the gold standard is the blood work.
Okay.
And being able to see, even if your hemoglobin A1C, which is an average of the amount of sugar in the bloodstream over 3 months, well, sometimes if you're up and down, the average is going to look okay. So giving an idea of what your fasting blood sugar looks like in a normal blood panel, that can also be something that kind of hones people in on where to look. And one of the other factors is your diet. You know, there's a lot of information about the effect of processed foods and how highly processed foods, and the latest research that I'm aware of shows that about 60% of the calories that Americans consume come from processed foods and highly processed foods. And it's not to say that all processed foods are terrible, but it is to say the onus is on each of us to choose to treat our bodies with more respect and make yourself aware. Knowledge is power. So give a look at the amount of added sugar that you are consuming. Give a look at whether you're eating more of a whole food-based diet or is a lot of your stuff coming from packages and cans and bottles and, you know, things that don't quite look the way they're found in nature.
Here in Clifton, we have the 07011 population, which is primarily have really well access to corner stores and bodegas and things like that. How would they go into those types of stores and make that choice of a healthier diet?
That is an awesome question. And that is such an important point because the amount of, we call those areas where it's really hard to access healthful foods, food deserts. And this country, unfortunately, is well known for food deserts. Where you don't have a lot of options if you're limited in your transportation ability to get to the ShopRite or the grocery store where there's a bigger array of healthful foods. So that is a really hard challenge. That being said, you can educate yourself because if all you've got is the 7-Eleven or all you've got is the Wawa, or, you know, there are better healthful offerings, right? And so what you want to do is start out with, does this look close to the way it's found in nature?
Okay.
Can I get a hard-boiled egg off this? Can I get carrot and celery sticks with maybe a hummus dip, right? Over time, highly processed foods are highly palatable. Food companies spend tremendous amounts of money to light up the brain. And what ultimately happens is that you're hijacking taste buds to prefer a certain taste. And it's the recognition that those types of foods, when you start to make different choices, things may taste a little bit different. It may not have that same level of satisfaction. And so it's going into your choices with, you know, eyes wide open. You know, the other thing is, if it's possible, there are food delivery services that can maybe up-level what you're choosing as your staple foods.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm sorry. Back to the original question. How can a person check their risk for developing diabetes? I guess with your population.
Yeah. So as far as type one, it's a bit more complicated. There are ways. There are things to look out for to prevent, even if you're going to be diagnosed with type one diabetes, being very sick. So some of the big signs you want to look out for, the two biggest ones are increased thirst and increased urination. Mm. So if you're noticing that your child is like, they were potty trained, but now they're regressing and wetting the bed, or they're constantly drinking water, losing weight. And then as it kind of, the sugar builds more and more in the blood, they get maybe tired. Those are some of the big signs that diabetes may be happening. As far as type 1, there is unfortunately no prevention. There is a new medication that was just approved where if you have type 1 diabetes antibodies, which basically tells us that you are going to develop type 1 in the next 5 years. For a time, there was really like you could know about that, but nothing you could do about it. Now there's a drug. It's like a 2-week infusion. It's called Tzield. And that can delay the onset by anywhere from 3 to 7 years. It's very new, and it doesn't prevent diabetes, but it can delay the onset of type 1 diabetes.
Hmm. All right, thank you. I guess this would be for more type 2. What are some tips for people to prevent diabetes? I believe we just talked about them. Lifestyle changes, definitely looking at nutritional changes, diet changes, kind of looking towards, I like how you use whole food diet. And that doesn't mean like the whole Happy Meal or the whole, like the whole entire menu, but just the actual, they're talking about the entire my plate, right? Mm-hmm. Or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Something like that, yeah.
I'm not a dietitian. So I'm asking, I guess, how would someone, if they're more visually, they have to see it visually, would that be, what would their plate look like?
So I think, like you said, my plate, that's a very, I would say, user-friendly visual. That I do typically use for, you know, basic nutrition education for any population. But of course, if we're trying to manage blood sugar with diabetes, you know, you have all of your food groups. And what I typically recommend with my plate is try to hit at least 3 food groups at a meal. Okay. You know, and I think, of course, I think most of us know one of the food groups is your grains, which is your carb food group. And a lot of people that I see that, you know, or maybe newly diagnosed, they fear that they have to completely give up their carbs and that whole food group. And it's just really managing that portion size. So, you know, on my plate, it's 1/4 of your plate. You want to pair that with protein foods to help manage that blood sugar spike. And then I say ideally half of your plate to be vegetables. So if I had to create an ideal plate, it would be quarter of like a whole grain, a quarter protein, and then half of like a nice non-starchy vegetable.
What would a non-starchy vegetable look like?
So that would be any of your like leafy greens. Think of all those like beautiful colors, your broccoli, your asparagus, carrots, tomatoes. All of those ones that have those like nice, beautiful colors.
Awesome.
I feel like it's easier to name the starchy ones. So that would be your potatoes, your corn, you know, those types of veggies. So I say that should go in that quarter of your plate, because your body kind of reacts more so to that as like a grain because it is a higher carb food.
All right.
And we use something very, very similar to that, where it's half the plate, non-starchy vegetables, eat the rainbow, get as many colors in as you possibly can, and a quarter of the plate a healthy protein, a quarter of the plate a complex carb, which would be a whole grain. We include fruit as the complex carb, or the starchy veg. So any of those options. And we also include about a teaspoon to a tablespoon of a healthy fat per meal, because that fat is going to carry satiety, that fat is going to carry flavor, and that fat is going to help you absorb fat-soluble vitamins, as well as blunt the rise in glucose right after the meal. So it just helps slow everything down, because fat leaves the stomach last. And I think fat has been maligned over the last few decades, but there are healthy fats like really good quality olive oil or avocado oil, cold pressed, expeller pressed, there are seeds, a handful of nuts. We even include a little bit of dark chocolate in there. Ooh, just because, oh, you know, good. Just a little bit of dark chocolate, but because let's be serious, but you know, it is eating in balance and making sure that the plate is made of whole foods. Again, like as much whole foods as you possibly can get in there.
I love that. I love what you said about eating the rainbow, because a lot of, and that doesn't mean like my rainbow and my plate will look like some people around here. But it will still look like what we need as a whole food.
Colors are nutrients. And so when you combine colors, you combine nutrients, and there's a synergistic effect, right? And so if you're always eating leafy greens, that's grand, that's glorious, but you're skipping out on the purple blues like beets and cabbage, and, you know, and they have important nutrients. You want to, you know, it's not Skittles. You don't want to be eating Skittles for eating the rainbow. You really want to be investigating some of these other options, and colors is the easiest way to do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's funny, when I talk about eating the rainbow, I always, you know, put that little asterisk, like I'm not talking about Skittles, I'm talking about, you know, fruits, vegetables, all the actual foods.
Yeah.
Whether I talk to kids, adults, I always throw that in there.
Do you ever go around with the community to around the ShopRite? My nutritionist just informed me that apparently that's like eat the outside of a ShopRite.
So that was a big, you know, thought, I would say, in the past. And yes, you, in the perimeter of the store, you'll get your produce, your, you know, your lean proteins, your seafood, your dairy foods. But I always like to remind people there are a lot of good things in the aisles. So your whole grains, you know, things like that, that, you know, do contribute to that, you know, that whole food mentality. Even kind of going back to the food desert part of it, you know, things like canned foods, they have come a long way. Frozen foods, they have come a long way. So somebody that, you know, might not be able to get to the store every week or every 2 weeks, even that fresh produce will go bad, or those fresh foods will go bad. Finding no salt added canned products or frozen products that can really help bridge the gap in, you know, I'm filling half of my plate with string beans or carrots. They might have came from a can or frozen, but, you know, I'm still getting that nutrition that if the alternative is not eating any vegetables, there are those great things that you can find, you know, siphon through the chips and the cookies and things like that. But there are good things that you can find in the middle of the store.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there are ways that can increase meal prep, you know, simplify meal prep, I should say, because everything doesn't have to be from scratch. And I think people are, you made a great point in that a lot of our patients, we give them permission. You can have frozen. There's some good canned pumpkin right now. We do a teaching kitchen, carb focused essentials, and we just made a pumpkin soup specifically for, you know, helping maintain blood sugar, right? And we did a teaching kitchen. We were on Zoom with some patients and this is how you make it. We cooked along. So I think that's a really important point that when you say eat healthy, it's got this idea that, oh my gosh, I'm going to be in the kitchen, I'm going to be cooking and I'm going to be chopping and I don't have time for this. And it's very discouraging when in fact, there are a lot of shortcuts out there. You know, I call it commando cooking. You can absolutely find the healthy stuff if you know what you're looking for. And that's where, you know, we come in.
Awesome. Commando cooking and a teaching kitchen. That sounds wonderful. That sounds really good. How do kids feel about it? How do the pediatrics, are they more interested in changing? I know it's a little different. How do they feel?
Say, it depends on the child and the age and the family. You know, we always encourage our families to make a family change. We discourage them from saying, okay, you have diabetes, this is going to be your food. We're having this, because that is very alienating for a child, and they already, especially if they're an adolescent, are feeling different from their peers. So we encourage a whole lifestyle change for the whole family, just eating more well-balanced diet, making better choices, and modeling for their children.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to touch upon, how do most parents react when they come to you and you tell them that their child has type 1 diabetes?
Yeah, it's definitely different for every family. I do a lot of work over on the inpatient side, specifically with our newly diagnosed families. The 90% of the time they show up in the ER and they're admitted to the hospital for stabilization, and then for just really a lot of teaching, so that they're feeling okay and safe to go home. And then I see them also a few days post discharge for just more teaching and more support. So it's definitely can be a shock. I would say the majority of parents were not expecting diabetes and don't know too much about specifically type 1 diabetes. There's a lot of misinformation and misconceptions out there. They think that maybe they did something to cause this, or it was something their child was eating. Whereas in the case of type 1 diabetes, mm-hmm. that's not the case. It's just something that happens in the body that is going to happen at some point. And there's nothing they can do to prevent it. So it's a lot of just reassuring them about that and encouraging them to just take things one step at a time. It could be very overwhelming mm-hmm. learning how to take care of this at home without the nurses and doctors around. So it's definitely a lot of overwhelm, a lot of sadness, grief. We have a lot of families going through all the stages of grief at once. Oh, right. Wow. So, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm just going to bluntly say that. Why would they be grieving if their child is still alive? I mean, the child's still alive. It is a change, but can the child have a healthy childhood?
100%. They can have a totally normal life, live to be old, married with children, have a totally normal life. We always tell them that. It's more so a loss of the life they expected. Mm. And the normal that they expected. Having a diabetes diagnosis means it's going to be a new normal.
Got it.
So a lot of parents with children newly diagnosed with a chronic illness feel like they lost, you know, what they had expected for their child and their family. But 100% they're able to live a normal, healthy life.
Awesome. All right. I have so many questions. Oh, man. Let's talk about what's on the agenda, Danielle. What are some tips you can share for people to maintain and manage their diabetes? This goes for type 1 or type 2. I'll leave that out there.
I think educating yourself as much as possible, finding reliable information sources, because, you know, Dr. Google is not always the best source, and there is a lot of conflicting information that people can dial into. So we actually in our practice have a list of reliable nutrition websites and podcasts, but educating yourself. I think there's a tendency to kind of want to take the easiest route. Yeah, things like that. And so it's really not as hard as people make it out to be. It really is about, as Julianne was saying too, like move your body and drink water as your main beverage and eat food, real food, not food that has a big long ingredient list, you know, food that is recognizable as food, food that your grandmother would say, oh yes, this is food, right? Because in the last 50, 60 years, the amount of food processing has just exploded. And there's a lot of information about how dangerous some of this is. You know, try to avoid artificial colors, artificial sweeteners. Artificial sweeteners are not your friend. They do not help you maintain blood sugar. And there's a recent WHO report about that. So it is that slow mindset shift of empowering yourself with reliable knowledge, and then taking steps in a way that's not crazy. You know, we're big on 80-20 in our practice. There's nothing that, even if you have diabetes, if you are having birthday cake or it's Thanksgiving and you're having pumpkin pie, you can do that.
Right.
We can work that in. We personalize that approach, but you have to start kind of from where you are and know what your limits are and how willing you are to make those changes. And it's usually gradual is better. So, you know, we help figure that out for you and with you.
Yeah. We always tell our families and our patients that it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Okay.
It's not sustainable to make all of these radical changes because it's a 24/7 illness. So it's, definitely something you have to do gradually that you're able to maintain. And then I think having a competent and appropriate care team, so like having an endocrinologist, is I always recommend, especially even as an adult. A lot of adults will kind of defer to their primary care doctor. Okay. And it's a mixed bag as far as whether the primary care is super experienced and well-educated in diabetes.
Recording in progress.
So I definitely always recommend going to an endocrinologist that you have a good relationship with.
Bluntly, I'm going to say, what is an endocrinologist?
So an endocrinologist is somebody who manages diabetes and other endocrine disorders, so okay. Thyroid, other metabolic disorders.
I think I agree with everything you both said. Definitely utilizing your resources that you do have, because, you know, the three of us here are just a very small example of, you know, who's out there to help you. And, you know, like Marissa said, Dr. Google can send you down this wild rabbit hole. So getting that credible information from, you know, people that have studied this and, you know, speak with people about this every day on a regular basis, you know, we can make it less scary. Like Christy said, you know, kind of putting it in a positive about, you know, when a new family hears about the diagnosis, like, you know, it's not the end of the world. You know, we'll get through this. Mm-hmm. So utilizing those resources for sure. And I definitely agree with what Marissa said that, you know, not everything is off the table, like the birthday cake, the pumpkin pie, you know, of course the holidays are coming and there's always something that will be outside of the norm. So we're here to help you kind of navigate that and get through that. So I definitely say utilize the resources that are available.
With the holidays approaching, is there specific options that they can bring with them that can also taste just as good?
So for this, going back to my plate, I say, you know what, for the most part, if you're still fitting in that structure of my plate, I have my quarter of my plate protein, so that might be my turkey. I have a quarter of my plate that starchy food or that grain food. Maybe that is mashed potatoes that day. And then the rest of the plate fill with, you know, those non-starchy vegetables. So not feeling like you have to eat something different, like we've talked about, mm-hmm. but just making sure everything's kind of fitting in their little section of my plate.
Especially, I mean, particularly for kids, we are mm-hmm. very, with type 1, we don't really recommend, especially in the beginning, any, like, dramatic changes mm-hmm. Because they are going to be counting the carbs for what they eat and giving insulin for it. They can essentially eat what they were eating. Now, that being said, we don't recommend to eat, like, you know, 6 helpings of mashed potatoes. Mm-hmm. We still recommend a healthy, balanced diet, but because it's such a radical change for a child and they're still growing, they need a bit more as far as carbs. We're a bit more flexible. So holidays especially, we just say, enjoy, have what you normally would have. Your sugars might be a little wacky that day, but yeah. The next day you get back to your routine.
Got it.
So one thing that I've found is helpful for, well, 2 things actually. Don't go into a holiday dinner hungry. Eat your normal lunch or breakfast, or, you know, make sure that you're not walking in there with the mindset of, oh, it's my once a year time and I'm going to starve myself and then I'm going to gorge. That's not a good strategy. You're much better off maybe eat a little bit lighter, but continually eat healthy according to your normal pattern, and then enjoy yourself. As Julianne pointed out, that plate is one of the easiest and most effective tools for composing meals when you work with the proportions of it. And the other thing is, there's research, because we're very evidence-based practice, there's research that shows that the first 3 bites of any food are the most pleasurable. And every subsequent bite gives you less pleasure. So when you want to have your treat, whatever, something that, you know, without guilt, because that's just silly and wastes of energy, but portion out 3 bites. And, you know, 3 bites, not 3 bites, but 3 bites. And enjoy it and have it as part of your meal, incorporate it into that. And then there's nothing better than a 10 to 15 minute walk after you've eaten to help your body uptake some of that glucose into the muscles and use it up. There's a lot of good data on that. So all options.
Great. Great, great, great. I'm definitely going to tell a few cousins not to skip on breakfast for sure. Now I just want to touch base about how people feel when they do receive a diagnosis of diabetes. According to the NIH, feeling stressed, sad, or angry can be common for people with diabetes. Many people with chronic or long-term illnesses, such as diabetes, develop anxiety or other mental health conditions. Another statistic, in United States alone, nearly 300,000 people under the age of 20 have been diagnosed with diabetes, with some form of diabetes. And while this is a new diagnosis, might be frightening to families very unfamiliar with the condition. But how can we kind of help them out?
Yeah.
And Yep.
It's definitely more of a risk to develop, even not necessarily like full-blown diagnosable anxiety disorder, depressive disorder, okay. but to have those symptoms with any chronic illness, but diabetes for sure. There is a heightened risk of disordered eating, diabetes distress and diabetes burnout. There's actually newer evidence-based tools for screening for diabetes distress and for diabetes burnout, which is essentially just what it sounds like, you know, okay. just maybe you're feeling happy with all the other parts of your life, so you're not depressed, but the diabetes is a real stressor and it's interfering with the way you take care of yourself. So it's really great to have a team of like interdisciplinary staff, which is more common in pediatrics. So there's a physician, a nurse practitioner, a clinical social worker, a psychologist, a child life specialist, a dietitian, having that team approach, especially having a psychosocial person to provide that education, support, counseling if needed. We always are quick to refer or recommend therapy for the family or for the individual with somebody who is experienced with chronic illness. Unfortunately, in the adult world, interdisciplinary care is less common, but I have to say more practices are starting to implement it.
Okay.
So having a care team like that, I would say, is great.
I think that's one of the benefits that we offer as an integrative practice, and you are starting to see it more. I mean, we have health coach who can help you strategize, and we have health psychology, and it is so important to know that you're not alone in that there is that team. And even if you have to cobble together your own team, there are practitioners out there who can work together and treat the whole person. Because the biggest thing, I think, is the recognition that we have that pretty much all chronic diseases have an inflammatory component. And when you're inflamed, there are lifestyle interventions that can help bring down the inflammation. But it's the recognition also that anytime you're inflamed, you are affecting the microbiome, that community of trillions of cells that live within you and on you. And that microbiome has a large influence on the mental status of people. Mood and food is a thing, right? And the microbiome, those bugs are the kind of the connector for it. So there's a lot you can do as a human being to make choices that support yourself rather than going down that rabbit hole. Again, knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And there's a lot of that research about inflammation and the gut-brain connection. It's really incredible. I definitely feel that anti-inflammatory food in general is good for like overall wellness, including mental health.
And it is those vegetables. It's those colors, you know, those whole foods and those vegetables are the things that the bugs that you want to cultivate live on and make very nice byproducts for you.
Awesome. I could fangirl with all of you for a little bit. You talked about specific resources. Where can they, find that burnout?
Yeah.
Assessment?
So there are a lot of great tools if you go on American Diabetes Association or ADA website. There is the Association of Diabetes Care and Education Specialists. They have a lot of great tools. And then as far as interventions, if you even going on Psychology Today, there is an actual specifier you could click for experience with chronic illness.
Okay.
And then even also finding peers. Peer support is a huge intervention we recommend, especially with kids. So Breakthrough T1D, it used to be called Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation or JDRF. They have a lot of support groups, meetups, local events. So they're a really great resource. And I would probably start there. Yeah,
absolutely. And Marissa, you talked about a lot of the resources your team has, and that can be found right on your website.
It can be found on our website. It can be found by, you know, we really advocate for a personalized approach. So there's nothing better than making an appointment with either the nutritionist. We have an integrative physician. We have a integrative advanced practice nurse. As I said, we have the health coach. We have acupuncture. We have health psychology. There's myself and another integrative nutritionist. So to be able to sit with you and talk to you, get to know you, get to know your life, you know, we spend a good amount of time in our initial appointments really trying to get a feel for what's going to work for you, what's not going to work for you. And our approach is to really partner and come up with a plan that is doable, and then troubleshoot anything that comes up to, you know, little landmines along the way, because anytime you enter the river of change, there's going to be some turbulent waters. But, you know, that's what we kind of excel at as a practice. So you can always call and make an appointment or just check us out.
Do you have resources in Northern New Jersey or virtual options?
We do telehealth. That's kind of dependent on someone's insurance per se, but I do know we just had a meeting yesterday about how Medicare is covering telehealth for diabetic counseling sessions, and the full-time dietitian there is also a certified diabetes care and education specialist as well.
Awesome. Thank you. Wow, this is amazing. I think I'm not going to skip over this question, but because of the holidays, what can families do to support their loved ones with diabetes?
I think kind of how we were speaking before, you know, don't single out certain aspects. Don't single out this is your meal, this is the rest of the family's meal, which is sometimes I do see that when people come to see me, that they... maybe they have to cook a separate meal for themselves or their spouse or, you know, a member of their family. And I think that showing that you're kind of in it with them, that, you know, we're in this together, we're going to all eat the same things, almost without like speaking, that action will speak louder than any words.
I think also a big part of supporting somebody is just kind of acknowledging what they're going through and validating it. I think as a society, we tend to say, oh, you'll be okay. It's not so bad. It could be so much worse. You're so tough. You could handle this. Where sometimes somebody just needs to hear like, wow, that must be really hard. And it really sucks that you have to live with this. And especially for a parent coming from a parent to a child or an adult, a teenager, just acknowledging that it's really hard and you wish there was something you could do to get rid of it, but we can't. It's more helpful often than just saying, well, it is what it is and you have to deal with it.
You're right. Yeah. Do you see that in a lot of teenagers predominantly?
Yeah, that it is hard, and a big thing we hear from teens or really anyone with diabetes is that nobody really knows what it's like unless they have it, and they'll butt heads a lot with their parents because their parents will say, well, you just have to do what you're supposed to do, you have to do it and it is what it is, and you know, you have to just deal with it, or other things that may be well-intentioned, but don't necessarily make them feel so great or feel so heard.
Okay. I'm just thinking, I have two different scenarios in my head. One, if a parent is saying that, how can they kind of flip the script? Would they sit down with the child,
could. You could sit down with the child and say, you know, I've been thinking, and this, I know this must be really hard for you, and I'm sorry if sometimes it feels like I'm tough on you, and just having that open discussion. Or to just start the next time you start to maybe go back and forth with your teenager, just trying that different approach.
Okay. And then if a, let's say you're, have a family member that has type 2 diabetes and you're now the child trying to make sure that your parent is taking their insulin, how would you flip the script in that way? I guess, how can you support them that way? Besides saying the, Dad, did you take your insulin today? You're eating, or something like that.
I think it's helpful to also partner with them, especially when you're dealing with an adult. You know, hey, I saw this new recipe. How about we try it? Mm. Hey, how about we go for a walk? Oh, I needed to, you know, I don't know, check out this store or whatever and come walk with me, or let's get up and move a little bit instead of meeting me for coffee or having lunch together. How about we go to the park and move, or do something like go to an art museum and walk through that. Those types of ways of building connection and partnership, because really it's, you can't do it alone. You're not supposed to do it alone. And when you can, when people feel cared for, that's when changes happen, you know? And I think a lot of times, like for us in our practice, and for me as a practitioner, eating is the most basic form of self-care. So when, and we tend to forget that. So when you can generate a sense of cared for in the people that you care for, everything just starts to become easier. It becomes more of a team, you know?
Absolutely, you're right. I would never have thought of convincing one of my family members to come walk to the store with me, and that would be a form of getting up and walking. But definitely, if they enjoy bird watching and walking in through the park, it's better than looking at a nature screen or a fake fireplace. So that's awesome. All right. I do want to pose two more questions for our lovely guest. How have you worked with the Clifton community?
So we've partnered together at the Clifton Senior Center. I did an education. This was during the summer months, so we talked all about hydration and different ways to hydrate your body beyond just water, because that's the first thing we all think about. Mm-hmm. So there was a good amount of education on hydration. I opened it up for questions and answers, and then I did a smoothie demo.
Yeah.
Because, you know, sometimes that's overlooked as a hydration option. So, yeah, we came out into the community and we had a wonderful program.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
I facilitated a support group for about 6 weeks over at the library in Clifton. So for kids and their parents, myself and a nurse from the community, a school nurse, we met weekly just to have a space for the kids and their parents to just kind of chat and vent and have that peer support.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that as well. Can you both describe your partnership with the health department and how that has been?
I think on my end, it's been great. You know, I love working with different communities. You know, we can reach so many more people by working together. And it's a part of my job that I love doing. So, yeah, I don't know. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it does. And we love to partner with you. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
it's definitely been great getting out into the community. I just feel like it's such an important part of wellness, and especially with diabetes. It's 24/7, 365. Yeah. It's not just when they come to our clinic once every 3 months for an hour. So getting out there into the community, I think, really helps maintain the progress and the maintenance that they have to make.
Awesome. We have come to the end of our podcast episode. Is there any final thoughts or discussions or some further questions?
No, nothing that comes to mind. I'll just kind of reiterate something I said before, is that use those resources that, you know, are in the community that are, you know, you can get to. So, you know, with ShopRite, our mm-hmm. services are free, so it's very accessible. You know, so if, you know, maybe insurance may be an issue, you know, that's a way to completely bypass that. So use those resources. Yeah.
So you guys would see a person that is uninsured?
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. We don't go through insurance at all. Yeah, ShopRite covers all of our nutrition costs.
Yeah. Wow, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I would just say to be your own advocate, especially young adults, anyone, when it comes to diabetes. It's important that if something doesn't feel right, mm-hmm. if you feel like your care team isn't maybe meeting you where you're at or listening to you, you could find another, you know, care team. It's interesting that, so I had mentioned that JDRF used to be JDRF, is now Breakthrough T1D, because they actually changed the name because 50% of people who are diagnosed with type 1 are actually over 18. So there is a lot of misdiagnosis where somebody will assume, okay, this person's an adult. This person is a little bit higher weight. This person is a minority. They will assume, okay, it's type 2. We now have tests and options to check for those type 1 antibodies to rule that out, to prevent that person from getting sicker. So just thought that's important to note.
Yeah. We can have a whole conversation on health advocacy right now, but let me stop.
Well, I would just say, you know, knowledge is power. And to quote Michael Pollan, eat food, not too much, mostly plants.
Yes. I love that. I love having this conversation with all of you. We will most likely have another chat again, hopefully, if you allow. Thank you all for coming on this podcast. If you have any upcoming events for the community, you can always send us a flyer here at the Clifton Health Department. We'll be sure to share any upcoming events. And I did want to touch base with Marissa. Do you do those teaching kitchens
often? Can we?
We actually have been doing them, and they're virtual. They're on Zoom for a variety of reasons. Carb Essentials teaching kitchens, we've been doing them kind of every other month. With different recipes. We've done a red lentil pasta primavera. We've done the pumpkin soup was just last week, actually. And so anyone who wants to, that is billed through insurance, that is treated as an actual visit. We do, you know, a lot of different types of teaching kitchens because it's so important to be able to show people how to read a label and translate nutrition into actual food. So we do have, we're in the process of planning other ones for 2025. So, you know, you can always give a call to our department, 732-263-7999, or check our website, or any of us will be happy to get back to anybody with any questions at all.
Absolutely. Thank you again. I'll be sure to put all of the links of the resources that we talked about in the bio of the podcast, and I'll be sure to link all of the resources as well, ShopRite of Lodi's website, and Integrative Medicine's website as well. Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful day and happy National Diabetes Month. Lauren, take us out.
Tune in to our podcast every other Monday for a new episode. If you have any questions, you can email us at health@cliftonnj.org. You can visit our website at www.cliftonnj.org. You can follow us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. Our handle is Clifton Health. And before we leave today, let us ask ourselves, did you make a difference in someone's life today?